This is Ken Freeland, facilitating the 9/11 Truth teleconference for the 27th of July, 2011. Anna, could you go ahead and read the roll call, and then if anybody's not on it, we'll add them and get started?
The participants on the call right now are Ken Freeland, who's the facilitator of the 9/11 teleconference call. We have Shelton Langford, spokesperson for the Military Officers for 9/11 Truth, Robin Horden from 9/11 Truth for World Peace and Justice, myself, Anna Yeisley, I'm the secretary of the 9/11 teleconference call. We have Barbara Honegger, independent researcher, author, and speaker, and Sheila Casey, a D.C.-based journalist and D.C.-based truth activist.
Okay. First item on our agenda is always to approve the minutes as circulated for the previous meeting, which was 7:13, I believe. Any comments on that, or can we take that for approval?
The only comments I heard were some details I had in the conversations, and folk were kind of, you know, having me. So there are some changes from the last, but they're very minor, and this next set of minutes aren't going to really detail the conversations like that that set of minutes. So.
I think we've circulated them in a certain form, and right now we're asking people to approve that form. Okay. So whatever's in there is fine. You know, it's not a problem as long as nobody objects. Okay.
Right.
Those are just guidelines I was sending you for the future to make it easier for you. Okay. Okay. Did somebody just come on the call?
I don't think so. But this is Robin. Are we doing the minutes right now from last meeting?
Yes, we are. Do you have a comment on those?
I do. Anna and I have emailed back and forth, and there was some type of a misinterpretation. I want to clarify it for this meeting or whatever.
Yes, please.
I had mentioned the organization called COPA, which is Committee on Political Assassinations, and I had mentioned COPA only in the light of them eventually growing to be able to figure out a way to get along collegially within their organization, considering all the various theories and concepts and information that was constantly developed and brought into their.
I'm going to interrupt you for just a second. Anna, I'd like to ask you to go ahead and facilitate the conference. I'm going to leave the conference momentarily and try to call Senator Gravel, and then I'll come back on. So if you would go ahead and facilitate, and then make the if everybody approves of the changes. Make the changes in the minutes appropriately and send them out again, okay?
Okay, sounds fine.
I'll be back as soon as I can. Thank you.
Okay. So that language regarding COPA, I had went ahead and did a little, you know, search on Google and found out that they were having an event in D.C., so I added that to the minutes, but it kind of took away what Robin was trying to say about COPA, and which was, and this is what I added to the minutes, let's see, Robin referred to COPA as an example, considering all the various working hypotheses surrounding political assassinations, and somehow COPA has found a way to behave respectfully with each other and has been able to handle the varying, differing groups in productive ways. Perhaps the 9/11 truth-seeking community could use COPA as a model of respectful behavior, avoiding self-destructive behaviors and personal attacks that devolve any community. That was the point that Robin wanted to make, and I think it's made very well.
I agree. This is Robin. That's what I was trying to explain. Good.
Okay.
May I make a comment?
Sure.
Yes,
Barbara. Is this Barbara?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay.
Just a brief comment is the paradox of that is that, my understanding anyway, is that either the founder or one of the original founders of COPA is John Judge, and John Judge inexplicably is just very ideological about Flight 77 having absolutely hit the Pentagon. And he's rather close-minded about all the evidence to the contrary. So, you know, it's if you if you take the analogy for how they get along with each other in COPA, talking about the JFK assassination and other assassinations, yes, I agree with Robin's comment, but if you were to bring John Judge into a 9/11 conference, I think it might have the opposite effect. It's paradoxical.
This is Ken. I'm back on the call. What we're only concerned about here is the accuracy of the minutes. We're not really up for substantive issues here. So, Did we get a clarification of what Robin would like the minutes to say rather than what they
we
say?
We did. I just read out the part that we changed. I could read the whole paragraph.
Okay.
Is
everybody in concurrence with that? Nobody has any objection?
I just want to say I'm on the line right now, Jonathan, Mark.
Hi, Jonathan. And, welcome.
Oh, Jonathan.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hey.
Okay. So has it been established that we're going to change the minutes according to Robin's request?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Then that's consensus, and it has the new language. So then with no further objections, then the minutes will be approved as amended, and we can look at tonight's agenda as circulated. Does anybody have any comment on the draft agenda?
I'd like to add, do you want to do some additions, this is Anna, to the agenda? I was going to suggest that Barbara Honegger's offer to mail that last event that she was a keynote speaker on might be put on the agenda to discuss.
Yes. Well, since that was an announcement and nobody objected when I said that asked if we could be put in the minutes, I'm just assuming that we can use it as an announcement in the minutes.
Oh, okay, and just skip the discussion, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the only other, this is Barbara, the only other, maybe there's a general announcement section of every call. I don't know. I haven't been on it for quite a while. But I do have a brief, maybe one-minute proposal to make at some point.
But that comes in the 9/11 10th anniversary, right, Barbara?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Yeah, that is listed on the agenda. That's our last item on the agenda, so that would be appropriate there, okay?
All right, fine.
Okay. Any other comments on the agenda? Hearing no further comments, then we'll take the draft agenda as adopted for tonight's teleconference. We'll proceed with our first item. I expected Senator Gravel would be on the call by now because I just talked to him, and he said he was going to call it up, so he may be having some problems. I suppose.
Why don't we just, if he calls in, we'll just prioritize and change what we're talking about, swap back to him.
Good idea. Does anybody have any problem with that?
No.
Okay, well, let's see what the next item on our agenda is then. That would be report back on whether and when. Okay, that was Lori Madwell. As I explained earlier, Lori Madwell wrote to us and let us know that she could not be on this call because of a scheduling conflict. So hopefully she'll be on the next one, but if not, I think it would be appropriate for us to request from her. In fact, I think what we ought to do, if everybody's okay with this, is I could send her a brief message maybe to Paul, saying that we were sorry she was unable to be on this conference and asking her if she's going to be on the next conference to make that report or if she would prefer to send us a written reply to the question. Does that mean with everyone's approval?
That's okay. Yes, I would approve.
Yes.
Okay.
I wanted to make a quick insert here that I did ask both Rob Balsamo of Pilots for 9/11 Truth and Craig Ranke of Citizen Investigation Team if either of them were invited, and they said they were not. So.
And I have not been as well, Barbara Honegger.
Neither is Robin Horton.
Right.
Well, okay, let's talk about that because there have been a lot of controversy about this question of being invited or not. Jonathan's here, and he can probably talk about this much better than I can, but essentially there were some people that were originally invited that were sort of arbitrarily selected, and the list of invitees has been self-selecting ever since. No one who's ever requested to be invited, who's had any background in 9/11, has ever been refused. It's just a matter of getting them on the email list. So it's not a question of anybody being ever being excluded, with the exception of a couple people who have had problems when they were on the call. But other than that, there haven't
well,
been
I
any
think,
issues.
Well, I think
that.
It's Barbara. I think there's a misunderstanding of the request then,
because
the request is, I thought, for Lori Manuel to let us know who the Toronto Hearing Board of Directors has invited to give testimony on the Pentagon at the Toronto hearing.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I misunderstood your point then. I thought you were talking about being invited to this conference, but you were talking about Lori Manuel. Okay, I got it.
Talking about Toronto.
I'm sorry, who just came on the call?
Mike Gravel. I'm sorry, I had trouble.
Welcome, Senator. Okay, thanks very much. Okay, glad you could make it. We'll be with you. We'll be on your issue in just a moment. We were just clearing something else up. Okay, so go ahead, whoever's talking about Lori.
Yeah, what we'd like Lori to be asked is if she's for sure going to be on the call 2 weeks from now, or if not, it might be great to have her respond or ask her to respond in writing as to who the Toronto Hearing Board or anyone connected with the Toronto hearings have already invited to speak in any way on the Pentagon attack. That's the question.
Okay. Well, I'll try to verse it that way, but she may only say, because I recall what she was actually promising to do, it wasn't quite that explicit. It was more like she was going to check with them to see whether they would permit her to let us know who those people were after they had a chance to accept or decline the invitation to the Toronto hearing. That was how I recall it. So, but I'm just letting you know that we're still interested in knowing the answer to the question, the original question, and see what she says. And we'll hopefully get some kind of response that we can talk about next time. Okay?
The basic idea is we're trying to get some feel for what information they're allowing to be said at the Toronto hearings on the Pentagon attack, basically.
Right. Okay.
Can you put Robin on the queue here?
I'm sorry, who?
Robin on the queue.
Okay, Robin. I'll try to make it brief, okay, because we're ready to go into Senator Lavelle's issue. He's with us now. Go ahead.
Yes. I've had direct and private conversations with Graham McQueen and have brought to the attention of the, let's say, higher educated intellectuals that have put this program together that the second objective of their hearings, which includes the first opening words, to single out the most weighty evidence, that concept is the single concept that has brought them and will continue to bring them the biggest trouble that they have. What that means is they're deselecting a lot of stuff, and the arbitrariness of their deselection is quite controversial. So in any event, I just want to report that there are some stirrings in motion for them to reconsider that. Whether they will or not, I don't know.
Great.
And that's going to change. That's going to control, in some ways, the invitation list.
Right.
I would like to say something about this, but I would propose that we postpone this discussion and let Senator Gravel go ahead and speak. I don't want to waste his time.
Right.
All right. There's a motion to take up this matter, to table this. That's actually a motion to table. And to bring it up again after Senator Gravel has a chance to give us a report. Anybody have a problem with that?
It's seconded.
Okay. All right. We'll do that, but we'll only allow it 5 minutes, okay, because we do have other things that we need to get on to, that we need to take care of tonight. Okay, so 5 minutes reserved after Senator Gravel's report. Okay, Senator Gravel, welcome back to the conference call. We're all anxious to hear what developments there are in the Citizens 9/11 Commission, so take it away.
Thank you very much, and I'll be very brief. I just had a call from the attorney at the Legislative Council in Oregon. They will be sending me within hours a draft, which I will then share with the key people in Massachusetts and the key people in Oregon. Then I will go over the draft, make changes if warranted, and be in touch with them tomorrow, and hopefully we'll finalize the text of the initiative satisfactory to both the Legislative Council of Oregon and Massachusetts, and essentially authored by them And so it's not just me writing this, it's my giving the direction to the two councils and having them resolve the legal language that they find most acceptable. That's where we're at. After that, Massachusetts, we have to wait till the 7th of September to get the final okay from the Attorney General. And already the Attorney General's office is involved with us in this regard, because one of the attorneys there is going to be helping us on the drafting from the Massachusetts side. After that, I am leaving, and I'll be in Europe for till the 7th of August. Then in mid-August, we will announce Portland, Oregon, at a press conference, and then we'll file in Salem, Oregon, the initiative for the state of Oregon. After that, I will be flying on the 8th of September to Toronto. I'll be there for 3 days, and then I'm speaking on the 11th, and then on the 12th, I fly to Boston, and then we'll have a press conference announcing the Massachusetts initiative, and then I'll spend a week touring the state of Massachusetts. I was born and raised in Springfield, so I'm very familiar with the state. It's a great time to be there in mid-September, maybe starting to get a little bit of color. So I'm looking forward to that. Now, the key to both efforts in Oregon and in Massachusetts is going to be, and I'll be touring Oregon, too, in the fall. Now, the key is going to be how much money we can raise to prosecute the campaign of getting petition signatures and then the campaign itself. Obviously, if we have misread the strength nationally and globally of the 9/11 truthers, and that we're not able to raise sufficient monies, and our hope is to, in addition to ordinary fundraising, we hope we'll hit upon an angel or two that will throw in some serious money. But it's all going to, the success is going to be a function of whether we can fund the program in Massachusetts and Oregon. And then, of course, if we're really well-funded, we will go into North, South Dakota, we'll go into Colorado, we'll go into Arizona, Arkansas, rather, and Missouri. So there could be a lot on our plate. It's going to depend upon whether or not we have the support of the 9/11 truthers across the world, not just the U.S. So if we're not successful on the financial side, then it's just a good idea that we had and is implementable, but if it's not funded, it won't be implementable. That's essentially my report at this point in time.
Okay, this is Ken Friel, and I have a question I'd like to ask the Senator, but does anybody else want to ask questions?
I'd like to be on the stack. This is Anna.
Anna, who else? Who else besides Anna and Jonathan?
Barbara.
Who else?
Robin.
Yes, I have a question. Sheila. I'm not sure if you heard me.
Sheila, no, I haven't, but I'll put you on the stack. All right, well, I'll put myself last. So, Anna, you're first.
Hi, Senator Gravel, thank you for joining us on this call. I'm taking the notes. I just have a few questions regarding the key people and the Legislative Council. Do you want to drop any names here? Would it be important for us to know who in Oregon that's helping with the language of the petition?
It's Gina. I got to look at it. It's a Polish name. It's Gina Zedlik. Zedlik, and she's the attorney that's been working on this. When I met with them in Salem, I met with the head of the Legislative Council, Dexter Johnson, and her, and went over for over an hour, 2 hours, outlining the details of what we were trying to accomplish. Back to Massachusetts, I've not spoken with this individual, but Rich Campbell, who is heading up the operation there, says that he has teed up Peter Sachs, who's at the Attorney General's office, to participate in a critique of the drafting.
Good. Rich Campbell was on the call last week, or the last call. Rich Campbell from AE911 Truth. So
yeah, and he's
happy to recognize his name.
He's real busy today, or I'm sure he'd been on this call.
By the way, just a comment. I believe that's Rich Muck Campbell with an MC.
Yeah, you're correct.
Campbell.
You're correct.
True. Yeah, that's true.
Campbell.
Yeah, he's having a meeting tonight on this with a group of people signing
his
deadline for August 2nd.
No, he's postponed the meeting because we're late in getting a text to him, and I think the meeting is going to be on Monday night.
Okay, thank you.
Just one more clarification. So, Gina, is that a male or female? Gina?
Female, a female.
Oh, okay. And
the the head of the Dexter Johnson, obviously, is a male, and he's the head of the Legislative Council, so I met with both of them.
And this is the Attorney General's office, the attorneys in the Attorney General's
office? No, the Legislative Council, there's a difference.
Okay.
Massachusetts apparently does not have a Legislative Council, and things are handled through the Attorney General's office. So in Massachusetts, we're dealing with the Attorney General. In Oregon, we're dealing with the Legislative Council.
And both those people, Gina and Dexter, are from Oregon?
Yes.
Okay, and they're from the, Legislative Council. Okay, that was clear. In Massachusetts, are there any folk that you could name or any,
Rich McCampbell is one. Now, several people that have called me, one from Northampton and another person, but I just don't remember them right now.
Okay.
I have the name tag.
Generally speaking, the Attorney General's office in Massachusetts is who we've made the contact with.
Rich made that contact. I did
great.
Not.
Okay, thank you. Jonathan, did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
Yeah, I want to add that there's a guy that has done referendums in Massachusetts that was interested in going over the language and making sure it's been done, but he's done it before, and so there's a good team. We again, this is the problem that Mike was mentioning before about the lack of support from the 9/11 Truth community. We should have double the numbers wanting to be on this initial ballot, but we're just having enough. We only need 10. We want to get at least 20, and it's close to that, but it looks like next Monday it should work out. August 2nd is the date that you have to bring in your three registered confirmation of your being voter status in your town, your town clerk, and then signing this the wording that's going to be coming from Oregon. Senator, that's mostly what I wanted to ask you about regarding Massachusetts. And you're saying you're going to be sending that wording to them this weekend?
Yes, I'll send it to them tonight, and they'll have it tomorrow. I'll be working on it myself tomorrow. I'm leaving for Europe on Friday, but I'll be in Atlanta on a six-hour layover, so I'll have ample time to work with both Massachusetts and Oregon on the technical details of it. So by the time I leave the country, we will have a final document that will be presented to this group of people in Massachusetts on Monday. They'll file it on Tuesday. The deadline is on Wednesday the 3rd. And so I think we're in good shape to meet the Massachusetts deadline and easily meet the deadline in, which we have no deadline right now, in Oregon.
Very good.
Thank you. Before we go to the next questioner, who just came on the line?
This is Adam Ruff.
Adam, welcome. Okay. We're talking with Senator Gravel right now. He's reporting on the developments with the Citizens 9/11 Commission. Barbara, you were next.
Okay. Well, hi, Senator Gravel. Barb Honegger, how are you?
Oh, hi, Barbara.
Hi. Yeah, great to hear your voice again.
Okay, great.
I have a couple of questions. The first comment real quick is that, as you know, I've been working with you for a long time on this, and I'm very, very pleased and relieved, frankly, that we're putting off California and you're focusing first on those two states, Oregon and Massachusetts. I think that's very, very good, and I think we have a real chance in those states, and I'm very, very pleased with that. I just wanted you to know.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. That's number one. And my question is, first off, as you know, I've spent hours giving you feedback on the California draft. I'm not an Oregon or Massachusetts resident, but I would spend hours giving
you, if necessary, feedback on the new draft for Oregon if you would like to send it to me. That's number one.
Okay.
And you could do that through Byron or directly if you wanted to, either way. The other is the question about fundraising. My question is about the timing of when you would need X amount of funds without naming an amount. Do we need a lot of funds in order to simply be, when you say success, is that getting enough signatures to get on the ballot and or the second phase of the process?
Getting enough signatures to get on the ballot is what's critical, and that will be costly. Now, the rule of thumb is that you can get about one-third of your signatures through volunteer efforts. The other two-thirds must come from a professional effort. I've been in contact with Rick Arnold, and he's out of Carson City and has done a lot of, he's a professional person in this regard. He's done initiatives for me in the past, so I know his work. And so he is prepared to open up offices in probably Worcester, Springfield, and Boston as soon as we can get a check to him, something on the order of $20,000, because he'll be the professional signature gatherers, you know, are paid weekly. So he'll be expending money as we go forward. But the total tab in Massachusetts to get ourselves qualified could approach $200,000. And about the same amount of money in Oregon.
To be raised by when?
Well, to be raised in Massachusetts, to be raised pronto, because we have to have all our signatures collected by December in Massachusetts. So that means cash flow over a month. Okay, does that help answer?
Yes, I'll get back to you on email with ideas, okay?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, next.
Okay, Robin?
Yeah, Mike, Barbara covered most of what I was concerned with. Mine is efficacy and Plan B. It's got to do with one of the things that you had said, which is that the program can't really go ahead if it doesn't reach certain funding levels. So have you developed there are two questions I have. This is the first one. Have you developed an approach for sort of a fallback if you do not get that amount of funding? In other words, maybe just Oregon or maybe just Massachusetts or something like that, going from the most economically sensible position first, okay, and then going from there. In other words, not getting spread out too thin. And then I'm also going to ask again sort of a clarification or a magnification. I fully expect that we are going to get the libertarians, the We Are Changes, the Ron Pauls, the New World Orders, a whole bunch of people jumping all over the 9/11 Truth movement as they did in 2005, 6, 7, 8 to try to get Ron Paul and the Libertarian Party notified. Do you see any bleed over in what you're doing? You have any influences in that? Is anybody influencing you in that? Or are you going to continue what you had stated to me before, which is that you will keep this initiative depoliticized regarding any party or candidate?
First off, we want all their support, but we don't want it from a partisan point of view. Now, this doesn't stop Ron Paul or Rand Paul or the Libertarians could endorse our efforts, could help us raise money to do it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that well, what does it mean when they support? Here, when I support something, I just believe in what they're doing. Now, I don't believe in everything that they may be doing, but I believe in enough of it that I'm prepared to support this. So this is very much of a narrow issue that people can say, I support it or I don't. And all you got to do is just admit that you believe that we should have a new investigation and the tool of bringing this investigation about. Here, I'll give you an example. The A&E group with Richard Gage, we approached their board. Last year, they made a full court press effort to get people to get petitions and into Congress asking them to have a new investigation. They're doing the same thing this year. And so they're not going to help or get involved in our quest because they're going to the Congress. As far as I'm concerned, I think it's a dead letter. I think it's a fool's errand. The Congress is not going to do it. Hell, we can't even get the national media to recognize the need in question. So with respect to, I hope that the A&E people will come around, but that's up to them. You know, we're all adults, and we understand what we're doing. And if they think that the Congress is going to do something, then, my God, they had a failure last year. And so maybe they're into therapy and not results. But that's as much as I want to say to them. I respect their efforts. They've done good work. They've done good research. But you see, the problem with human governance is informing the people is not enough. The people do not have the power to act upon the information that they have. They gave their power away on Election Day.
No, I understand that.
Before you go any farther, somebody's got a woman's voice going on in the background. Whoever that is, you can mute your phone by going *6. And then when you want to come back, just go *6 again, and it'll allow you to speak, okay? But we need to silence that in the background. Thank you, whoever did that. Go ahead.
Okay, Robin. This is Robin. Thank you for your answer again, but directly, forgetting A&E and all that kind of stuff. My direct question to you is: do you feel that there are enough barriers or fences or boundaries, walls between any political party and what it is that you're doing? Because the We Are Change, Libertarians, that whole clan hijacked the 9/11 Truth Movement 5 years ago, and it would be bad for it to happen again.
Yeah, I got to tell you, there's nobody going to hijack this one. We have a very small steering committee, and we're going to keep it that way, and we're doing what we're doing. So the only thing they could hijack is go get signatures. That's what we're in. That's what we're involved. So I don't anticipate anybody hijacking it. And like I say, there's no plan B if we fail, and there's no real failure, because whatever we do, we're trying to raise the visibility of the people in this country about, and worldwide, in fact, about the shortcomings of the investigation that was done on 9/11.
Right. So that leads to the second question, actually the first question, which was the financial relationship, which is the fallback position. And I disagree with you that there is no failure. An attempted initiative that fails ends up being a black eye failure. So that's the sort of wisdom I'm looking at prioritizing finances and efforts into one place that has a higher degree of success potential than spreading too thin. So do you, if you had to choose, are you in a mindset where if you, because of funding, you had to choose one or the other, you can just kind of focus on either Massachusetts or Oregon before we go to the next phase? It's a financial
thing. Well, I would focus on Massachusetts, which would have a larger media impact, and then next would be Oregon.
Okay, thanks, Robin. Sheila, you're next.
Jonathan after.
Yeah, thanks.
Please try to keep it fairly brief, okay, because we still have a pretty big agenda to take care of in 6:48. Thank you.
Sure. I'm just wondering, how do we know that we'll avoid what happened with NYC Can, where I think they were told they needed 20,000 signatures, they got 20,000, then they were told they needed 80,000, they got 80,000, and then the whole thing was thrown out. Are we going to be in a position where we're going to run into that kind of thing?
Yeah, no, because I was involved with the New York one. I did a lot of appearances. At the time, I was very suspect of the legality of the way they were handling it. They were appointing all the names of the persons who were going to serve on the commission, which normally is illegal. And of course, on that dilemma, it was thrown out by the courts. They eventually collected 80,000 signatures. It was thrown out, and I looked over very carefully the judicial decision in that regard, and I agree with it. I mean, if I'd have been sitting as a judge, I would have thrown it out too. So it's unfortunate that they did not pay enough attention to the technical aspects of writing the initiative. That's not a mistake we're making, because this initiative may have been designed and dictated by me, but the actual writing is being done by the Legislative Council. So like it's like the initiative that we drafted for California. And the reason why we're not doing California is because it would take a couple million dollars. Now, if we get a couple million dollars, we'll be able to crank up California along with the others. But as far as what the California's draft that we have, it's blessed by, and it's on the stationery of the Legislative Council. It's not on my stationery, it's on their stationery. So that's a big difference from what they did in New York, which was a group of attorneys who didn't really have all that much experience with initiatives, drafted what they thought was the ideal. Well, that ideal was not all that sound.
Well, okay.
But they did set the precedent. I don't want to dump on them. They did set the precedent, and that's what was very important.
Well, for me personally, I have to say that this is one thing that's keeping me from being hugely enthusiastic about what you're doing, because I don't really feel that I have the legal background to judge in what way what you're doing is different than what they're doing, and what way they made a mistake. And I'm just throwing that out there because, you know, it may be a common barrier in terms of raising money from a lot of truthers.
Here, just that simple. I've just given you a reasonable explanation of what they had wrong, and I've given you a response that says that our initiative is drafted by government officials. So,
Gravel, maybe do you think it's possible that you could put on the website this point-by-point comparison with the New York draft to show what the problems, legal problems were with that, and how yours is an improvement over that, why it has more chances of success?
Well, first off, I could give you the legal, the judges. I've got it in my files. I'd have to dig it out. We could put it on the, but you see, what that's doing is dumping on these people in New York. You know, that they did. I don't think it serves our purpose at all to turn around and say that they did a very incompetent job. And my answer to that is that it's not me that's doing the job. I've dictated what I wanted the attorneys in government to write, and they've written it. And so it's their writing. And so if you have no confidence in that from a legal point of view, there's nothing more I can say about it.
Jonathan, Mark.
No, Jonathan. Okay, well, I'll put you behind me, but before we give people a second chance to speak, we're going to have to take a vote on extending the time. So, Sheila, are you finished the home?
Yeah, I'm done.
Thank you. Okay, Senator, I have two questions for you. One's a very quick legal question. People who gather signatures in a state do not themselves need to be legal residents, do they, of the state?
No, they don't. Some states have tried to pass that law, but it's been declared unconstitutional.
That's what I thought. Okay. Now, my major question for you has to do with the AE-911 truth. I know that recently you and several of your associates were on a conference call with them where they were deciding whether to give you support. And I know from what you said earlier that they basically have taken a kind of standoff position where they're giving you lip service support, but they're not going to give you any actual.
Well, they weren't even giving us lip service. They were saying that their plan is to ask to get their people on a campaign to ask the Congress to initiate a new investigation. I think
so
that's,
have they actually seen there's a conflict? Do they actually feel there's a conflict between what you're doing and what they're doing?
A conflict enough that they didn't want to get involved with us.
Okay. I've seen Ken Jenkins has shared with me privately Richard Gage's response, and I've asked him for permission to share it with others here, and that was about a week ago. We're still waiting for apparently some response from Kevin Ryan that he says once he gets that, then I can share this, but I don't know what that's about and why it's taking this long a time to be able to openly discuss the Richard Gage response.
Can I address this, Jonathan? I got a
call
from
David. Do you know the answer to that? Do you know the answer to my question, Jonathan?
It's related. David Schlesinger called me up from AE 911 and told me that in this call that he was glad to say that architects and engineers were willing to support their tabling on September 8th to include information from this campaign of 911 CC. So there's limited support, but I think...
That's not really relevant. Jonathan, I'm trying to get a specific answer to a specific question here about releasing Richard Gage's response for public consideration, okay? That's what I'm trying to find out, okay?
Okay, so it was done, though. You know it was done already?
Yes. I've seen
okay.
it.
Okay.
Okay. So,
okay.
Again, Senator Duval, Ken Jenkins said that he wanted me to wait until some response came from Kevin Ryan about something else, at which time both of those responses could be openly viewed, but it's been quite a while. Do you know what the delay is there or why that response?
No, I don't, and I stated my position very clearly about what happened with A&E, and okay. Ken, of course, is very much involved with them and knows these people better than I do.
Okay, very good. That's all the question I had. Wait a second, Barbara. Before we go on here, first of all, who joined the call recently? Somebody has just come on the call, 705 number?
Yes. Yes, it's Paul Zaremka.
Paul, okay, yeah. Thank you. Paul, welcome to the conference.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can you put in on the stack regarding just what we were just talking about?
One moment.
A 9/11 truth and the 9/11 commission.
I'd
like to comment on that, too. It'd be very short.
Hold on. Okay, now, I want to let everybody know that it's now 6:56 p.m., okay? We have several items on the agenda that really need to be considered this evening that have been we've been waiting to discuss, and we've already taken a fair amount of quite a bit of time with this. I'm willing, of course, if anybody wishes to propose that we give more time to this, to take more time with it, but I'm going to ask that we reserve at least 20 minutes beyond whatever time we spend on this to take care of the other items on the agenda. So does anybody wish to request that we continue this conversation with Senator Revelle?
I would like to go to my proposal first and then go to the other comments because it relates to this issue of our teleconference focusing on this campaign.
That's a call for order, and that's in order because actually on the agenda we should be considering a call. Senator Revelle, I'd like to encourage you to stay on the call for this, if you would, because Jonathan's proposal has to do with our focusing this call for the near future on supporting an independent investigation such as the one that you're proposing. Okay,
I'll stay on.
If you don't mind, maybe what we should do is continue in order, take that up, debate and vote on that, and then go back into the discussion with you on the specific.
That's fine. I'll stay on.
Okay, thank you. Is everybody okay with that?
Ken, Robin, quick
comments later, yes.
Right. Ken, this is Robin. I propose that we give this discussion another 4 or 5 minutes and clear the stack. I think there's only a couple of people. It's all fresh in the mind, and then move on. Jonathan's point.
Okay,
well,
there's an objection to Jonathan's proposal to order. Now, this will take a two-thirds vote because his proposal actually is in order, and we have exhausted the time allotted for this call. So, we're going to take a vote on this now. If it gets two-thirds, then we'll stay in this call with Senator Revelle. If it fails, we will take Jonathan's proposal up and then return to this agenda item. Okay? So, Anna, go ahead and call the roll.
Could you repeat the question?
Yes. The question is, should we change the agenda to allow to continue this discussion at this time with Senator Revelle rather than taking Jonathan's proposal in order and then returning to it, okay?
Uh-huh, okay.
So a vote yes here is in favor of Robin's objection to continuing with the agenda as it has been agreed to. Yes is support for Robin's position, okay?
Okay,
I'm not voting. Yeah, I'm not voting, so go ahead and take the next one.
Okay. Can you clarify the vote once again? I'm sorry.
Sure.
Yay or nay? Yes,
yay is supporting Robin's request that we continue this conversation with Senator Gravel before moving on, and a no is allowing us to continue with the agenda as we first agreed upon it, which would put Jonathan's proposal before us at the present time.
Okay. I'll go down the roll call list. Ken, you said you're not voting?
Correct.
Are you? Okay, Sheldon?
I don't vote unless it's a tie. Okay, go ahead.
Sheldon?
Yes.
Robin?
Yes.
Anna says yes. Barbara?
Yes.
Sheila?
I say continue with Gravel, whichever one that is.
That's okay. A yes. Jonathan?
No.
Senator Gravel?
I won't vote.
Okay, well, I think it's plain that we've got a two-thirds support
right.
for the proposal. So let's continue this. We have three people on the stack right now, as I have it, Barbara, Anna, and Robin, each of whom would be entitled to a little over a minute, okay? And then that will exhaust their 5 minutes. Go ahead, Barbara.
George Ripley
okay,
just checked in.
Yeah, real quick,
hi,
Senator Gravel.
I'm sorry. What did you say, George? George, are you here on the call?
Yeah, I just joined.
Welcome, George. Good to have you with us. Thank you.
Thanks.
This is George who? I'm sorry.
George Ripley.
George is on our steering committee, the campaign steering committee.
Oh, great. Okay. Great. Thank you. Barb Honegger here for about a minute. I just wanted to make a comment about the A&E decision about not explicitly publicly supporting this particular initiative of Senator Gravel's and their decision to just go for a congressional investigation. I just want to go on record so that I'm not sure Senator Gravel yet knows this, but I completely agree with Senator Gravel. I was the author of October Surprise, got it almost single-handedly into a congressional investigation, a reinvestigation of the Iran side of Iran-Contra. It was voted on by the House of Representatives. It was funded to the tune of $15 million and produced a GPO report. If A&E was successful in getting a new congressional investigation, believe me, it is 99% likely that there will be a Zellico in charge of it. And the Zellico for the October Surprise House Task Force was none other than Lee Hamilton, who, of course, was one of the cover-up artists as a co-chairman of the 9/11 Commission. So going to Congress, in my opinion, even if they succeeded in getting a new investigation, it would be a whitewash and it would be the worst of all possible worlds, because there would be a negative outcome, and it would have been a new investigation, and it would work against us. That's my comment.
Barbara, when you said you wanted to go on record, are you asking for your comment to be put into the minutes?
Absolutely.
All right. Then would you mail a copy of what you just said? Thank you. If nobody has any objection, Barbara's comment will be in the minutes. Okay. Anna, you're next.
I'm a participant on the weekly AE-911 Congressional Outreach Call, and I was happy to hear one of the participants talk about Senator Gravel's initiative, that he was excited about it. We had some discussion regarding it. There's a few other calls, AE-911 Truth calls, that I'm invited to, but I usually can't make it. But yeah, I believe that AE-911 Truth, I have a hard time believing that they would say a definite no at this point, and I think there's a lot of opportunity to speak to those who may, be influential. There's no reason for them not to hop on board on this. This is just right in line with what we're trying to do, a new investigation, whether it's citizen or congressional. I think the citizen one is going to have a lot more enthusiasm and a lot more success than the congressional, so I agree with Barbara there. So I want to say I think a concerted effort to talk to the AE-911 Truth folk, and I know a lot of them. Rich McCampbell has been on the congressional outreach calls too, and he's obviously on board. So I think that there's some room for persuasion, and I'd like to do my part there.
Okay, thank you, Anna. And Robin, you're the last speaker.
No comment, Ken. I already made it.
Oh, okay. All right, then. I guess we're done with the stack, and that ends this. So thank you very much for the report, Senator Gravel, and for answering our questions. And now let's move on to Jonathan's proposal. Jonathan, would you read your proposal, please?
Can you please read it? I don't have it with me.
Sure. One moment. Unless you have it handy, Anna. If you don't, I have it somewhere. One moment.
I wasn't sure what proposal we were talking about, so I'm sorry. I wasn't.
Okay.
I have the agenda.
Here it is. 9/11 Truth Teleconference will focus until at least September 11, 2011, on an actionable campaign to gain a new investigation into the events of September 11, 2001. specifically the Citizens 9/11 Commission campaign. Supporting and promoting it shall be the primary focus of our teleconference for the next 2 months.
Can we take a vote on that?
Well, Jonathan, Jonathan has put this forward, so he has the first right to speak to it, and then others will have a right to speak for or against, and then we'll vote. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Okay. This is related, and I really appreciate.
Before you proceed, Jonathan, I need to ask if anybody here is neutral on this question, who would be willing to facilitate this segment of the conference, because I'm not neutral on it, and I can't, and I need to be participant in the debate. Would somebody who feels they can be neutral on this, please?
This is George Ripley. Would you like me to?
Yes, George. If you're willing not to vote,
right.
Go ahead.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, so go ahead, Jonathan.
Okay, thank you, George. I think the problem that we're facing with AE 9/11 Truth is the similar thing we've been facing all along with the splitting of the 9/11 Truth community, and this teleconference really hasn't resolved these issues. If anything, it put fire under them, except for the work of Robin Horden, who has made some eloquent communications about friendly fences and why we should focus on what we most all agree upon and accept what other peoples do as a friendly fence, such as the Toronto Convention, where we could have a focus on trying to steer them, but we're really not in the steering committee, and all we'll be doing is discussing it and giving our ideas. But this campaign is needing our complete attention. Then we can be an example for these other groups that we're asking to come in. And so I'm asking for this group to focus on this, at least for the next couple of months. Otherwise, I'm going to be removing myself from the teleconference and just focusing on the citizens campaign because it means that much, and I'm here in Massachusetts as well. So that's my interest in having this group vote yes on this proposal and just focus on this. I know in November we're going to be talking about the Pentagon because it's going to be a forum in Washington, D.C., and I think it would be very appropriate then. But at least for the next couple of months, this campaign, if you can help heal the 9/11 Truth Movement by rallying around this campaign, and Senator Gravel deserves our trust and our respect, and he has a lot of credibility, and he's not doing anything outlandish. If we can help 9/11 blogger to AE 9/11, to the Pentagon people, to the Ron Paul people, understand that on this 10th anniversary, we all need to stand strong on this and get the people's action rather than do the depleted congressional campaign and other things like that. That's my interest in this proposal.
Paul Zarenska,
I'd like to be in the queue. It's Barbara.
Paul Zarenska, I'd like to be in the queue.
Robin on the queue.
Ken,
I'd like
to be on the queue.
I'd like
to be in the queue, too. This is Sheila Casey.
Robin, Kevin, Sheila. Barbara, you were on first, right? Barbara?
Paul was somewhere there.
Who's that? Ken.
Paul Zarenka.
Okay,
yes.
Paul.
Ken Freeland.
Sheila, Paul, Ken, everybody. Oh, this is great. Sheila, somebody came in after you. I didn't hear that. Okay, we've got Barbara, Robin, somebody begin, Kevin, Sheila, and Paul and Ken.
I think that Kevin was Ken. I think that was when I told you
my
name.
Oh, okay. Okay, Kevin, Sheila, and Paul.
No, Ken.
There is
no Kevin.
I'm sorry, Ken. Uh-huh. Okay. Barbara, Robin, Ken, Sheila, and Paul.
Sure.
Okay, Barbara.
Okay, I'll keep it brief, maybe a minute. Barb Honegger here. I feel very strongly against this proposal, but the reason is this is the 10th anniversary, and this is not the only important 10th anniversary relevant action. Senator Gravel, I would be fully in favor of making it the top agenda item, for instance, at each call, but I think that there are I think that the Toronto hearings and what's happening at the Pentagon and what's happening in New York and a proposal that I'm going to be making for us to consider for New York later in this call and many other actions the 10th anniversary comes before the Oregon signatures need to be in by December 10th, I think it was, for instance. So I would be completely against making it the sole focus or even the main focus, but certainly it could be the top priority in terms of the order on the agenda. That's my comment.
Thank you, Barbara. Robin?
I ditto what Barbara said.
Thank you. Ken?
Well, I think we need to be clear on what we mean by focus, and there's a problem with that being something of an ambiguous term. It certainly doesn't say exclusive focus, so I don't think that there's any intent on Jonathan's part, although he can clarify that if I'm wrong, to exclude other considerations for the call. But I do think that he's asking for us to do more than simply put it at the top of the agenda. I think what he's asking is that any time there's any agenda item that relates to the 9/11 Citizens Commission or this effort for an independent commission, that it be given untrammeled time and energy at the expense of other possible or considerations if there's any kind of conflict, but certainly not to the extent that it is the sole focus. I don't believe Jonathan's asking us to make it the sole focus, only that it becomes the primary focus and that we basically, defer to it whenever there's any kind of conflict for time and energy. Is that correct,
Jonathan?
Can we
get a clarification from Jonathan if that's his intent?
Yeah.
My interest is leading towards action so we can do more than discuss these issues, and but this is something that could deserve our action besides a teleconference, so we can actually be
okay.
successful in helping this campaign work. There has to be more work done to make it work, and that's why I want the conference
just
to be
just
short.
For the clarification's sake, I mean, I think Jonathan's affirmed what I'm saying. Now, I'd like to just make my own argument here very quickly. I feel the same way pretty much that Jonathan does. I think the 9/11 truth movement has reached an impasse and a series of internal conflicts that cannot be resolved any way other than a unified effort to get an independent investigation. I reached that conclusion almost a year ago, and I have never wavered in that. And this is, seems to me, the only effort right now, the only serious effort made to do that. And I agree completely with Senator Gravel that the 9/11 truth effort to get the Congress to act is futile. So, that being the case, I think that it becomes incumbent on all of us as 9/11 truth activists to devote ourselves to this cause, and that it would therefore be reflected here on the teleconference as well, that we give it our primary focus. And I think I would agree with Jonathan that if we can agree to do this, then I question what we can agree on that would be very useful. And I would have to reconsider my involvement as well. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next is Sheila.
Hi. I vote against this because, for one, I think it's vague to say what we're going to focus on. We're already giving it a lot of focus. The question is, do we want to make it the primary focus? And that hasn't been answered. But I'd say for me personally, as many of you know, I think the primary, most important issue facing the truth movement is the issue of infiltration. And the fact that we have people in high positions who are not acting in the best interest of the truth movement and are telling lies about other researchers. Now, this keeps getting called squabbling and infighting, but, if a cobra was slithering across your dining room floor, you wouldn't say, ignore it because, you'll scare the children. You would get rid of it. I just feel that I have to keep paying attention to that, partly because very few other people are, and I see us being hijacked in a direction that could ultimately be a dead end for the truth movement, which is a focus purely on the World Trade Center.
I agree.
Agreed.
That was Anna.
Mm-hmm.
Who was
that
agreeing?
That was not
then?
Me. I don't agree.
Oh, Barbara?
I agree that it should be a primary focus.
Okay. I didn't get the names of those in agreement, but...
I agree with Sheila. Shelton,
uh-huh.
This is Adam Ruff. I agree with Sheila.
Excuse me, I'm on next. Paul Zaremka.
Okay, and Paul, you're on next. I just wanted to get who was where. Okay, Paul, go ahead.
I move an amendment that focus shall be defined as at least 20 minutes in each conference until – 20 minutes in each conference during the time period that Jonathan proposes in his proposal, subject to extension during the teleconference. In other words, I just want the definition to be 20 minutes minimum.
Second. Well, we're not only first. Our way of doing this here, just so George knows, is to first ask Jonathan if it's a friendly amendment.
No.
No, Jonathan.
I don't think it is.
Okay.
Because the definition of focus really has to do with commitment and actions
right.
beyond the teleconference.
All right. So okay. Then it's in order to vote on it
Okay. So how would the new proposal be worded then?
Just add the words where focus is defined as at minimum 20 minutes for each session. Teleconference. Sorry.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So we want to hold a vote on that. And
No, it's a debatable proposition. It's a debatable amendment, so it has to be offered to, debate back and forth.
Okay, right. So let's discuss it. Anybody to discuss it?
Robin.
Barbara.
Robin.
Anna.
Robin. Anna. Okay. Barbara.
Well, we wouldn't want to lose anybody on the call, and I think we're reaching agreement here. We might want to amend the proposed amendment language to the effect a minimum of 20 minutes, which we can vote during the call to extend, and that the focus would be on action towards getting the success on the Gravel initiative in whatever states are focused on outside the call. In other words, on action, as Jonathan says. I would totally agree with that. And make it the top priority on the call, as long as it's not the only priority.
All right, Robin.
Yes, well, I think she's voting. I think she's offering an amendment to the amendment, if I'm not mistaken. And in that case, the question would be whether Paul. I'm sorry. Who made the original amendment? Paul. And whether Paul considers it friendly to his.
Unfriendly is because it's too complicated.
You see, unfriendly?
All right. So the way I have it, the reading of the new proposal is the 9/11 Truth Conference teleconference will focus at least until focus for a period of 20 minutes, which can be extended during the call until at least September 11th on an actionable campaign to gain a new investigation into the events of September 11th, specifically the Citizens 9/11 Commission campaign.
I'll accept that as friendly.
Okay.
And that was Paul that accepted that as friendly?
Yes.
I'd like to make comment. Just put me on the stack if you could.
Wait a minute. If Paul is accepting Anna's proposal as friendly, then it's worded differently.
Oh, wait,
okay.
I haven't had a proposal. This is Anna.
I'm sorry, not Anna. Whoever made that amendment?
Barbara made Sheila. The first, and Robin
Barbara.
Is still on
yeah.
the stack.
Okay,
ahead
of Anna. So that becomes the new wording then of the amendment proposal, is what Barbara said, okay?
No, if I may clarify, my proposal was to add what Jonathan had originally said, words of a clause to the effect with a focus upon action towards success of the initiative outside of the call.
Not just
discuss on the call, but to talk about what we're doing and what we commit to do outside the call.
Okay, but we're now debating Paul's amendment. Was that an amendment to his amendment or no?
I think Paul's was an amendment to mine, but maybe it was the other way around. I've lost track.
No. Paul made his amendment proposal first, and that's what all we should be debating right now. Now, if you made that secondary amendment and he considers it friendly, then that becomes the new language of his amendment, okay?
Okay. I haven't heard if he considers it friendly.
Okay. So
I thought he said he did.
Focusing just on the new wording, it'll say 9/11 Truth Teleconference will focus at least 20 minutes, which can be extended on action towards the success of 9/11 CC outside the call until at least September 11th, in other words, for 2 months, on an actionable plan. Everything else stays the same.
Correct. That would be the new amended version.
Yeah, I call for a vote.
Could I make a comment? I think I was back. We're losing the word primary, and I think that, that Jonathan's initial the idea was to make the 9/11 the Citizens 9/11 Commission the primary focus. I would prefer not to use put 20 minutes a call, but I think all agenda items should be considered in relation to. Is it a primary issue regarding
that word is still in the original version? It's the last sentence, the second.
Okay,
sentence.
But the new version we're voting on, I didn't hear primary.
No, that's not true. It keeps all the original language plus Paul's amendment. Okay, that's the way it stands right now.
Okay,
all that is still part of it. Okay,
right.
Paul said that my comment or proposal was friendly. But one of my main comments is that I'm not comfortable with the word primary unless it is qualified that primary would simply mean it would be the first item discussed, not to the exclusion of other important 10th anniversary items.
This is Ken. Look, it has never talked about exclusion of anything, okay?
Okay.
And if my understanding is, maybe Jonathan could agree at this point with Barbara's addition to the amendment, that this is a friendly amendment, and maybe we could have consensus here, okay? Because I think now we've got a workable idea of what we mean by focus, which doesn't exclude anything else, and which does quantify it to some extent, and which allows us to keep it so focused on action.
It doesn't say shall be the only focus. It says
does not. It's just primary.
Secondary is and tertiary are implied.
Still there. Right. Jonathan, can you now consider the proposal friendly?
Yes, I do.
Okay. In that case, then I don't think we need to debate the amendment any further because it's now amended in a friendly way, and we can then see if anybody opposes it. Right? Does anybody oppose it as amended?
Who?
If not, then I think we have consensus so we can move on to the next agenda item. Thank you, everybody, for that very strained and complicated but very cooperative effort. Thank you. Okay. Now we can go back to the Senator Gravel discussion and the 9/11 Citizens Commission. Does anybody wish to be on the stack?
I've already spoken. This is Barbara.
I'm pretty sure I was the first one on the stack for that resuming of that discussion.
Okay, Anna.
I can take it back from here.
Okay.
George, thank you.
We're resuming the previous discussion, right?
Thank you for filling in, George. Appreciate it very much. Okay. Go ahead, Anna.
I think that was Sheila that wanted to be on the stack.
Sheila, was that you? They had a further comment? This is my mistake. We agreed to wrap up that discussion before we went into this one. So now we're ready for the last item on the agenda, which is the 9/11 Truth Conference. Oh, no, I'm sorry, it isn't. It's the report on the time for the conference call. Wait a minute. Whoever's speaking, I'm getting very blurry speech. Does anybody else have any problem?
Yes, I am, Barbara.
Okay, Barbara, you're not coming through clearly.
I think it's Sheila.
So that wasn't me. I was agreeing that whoever spoke, I also could not hear clearly.
Okay. Whoever's speaking right now, Barbara, I think that's you. You're not coming through clearly. There's something wrong with your...
No, I don't think it's Barbara. I think it's Sheila.
Sheila,
can you see?
Hang on a second.
Yeah, okay. Well, while Sheila's doing whatever, I'm going to go ahead. Thank you. That's better. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda here, which is the report on the times for the conference call.
a second. Now that we've got my phone working, can't I say what I was going to say?
No, because that was my mistake. We had agreed to finish up that discussion before we moved to Jonathan's vote, okay, Jonathan's proposal. So now we're simply back on the agenda as we were supposed to be, okay?
Okay.
We agreed to finish up that discussion earlier and finish off the stack, remember? Okay, so we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people respond to the survey. And the times that were considered for the conference call were 6 p.m. Eastern, which is 3 Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, which is 4 Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, which is 5 Pacific, and 9 p.m. Eastern, which is 6 Pacific. Three out of four of them got X's, which are people who said that these were times they could not make. There was one X for the earliest time, which is the one we're on now. There was 1X for the 7 o'clock time, which would be the next slot. And there were 2Xs for the very latest slot, which would be 9 o'clock. The only one which had no Xs was the 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific time. And it had as many stars as any others, which is to say preferred times for people. It had 3 preferred times, which is as many as any other slot. And it had almost as many people saying that they could handle it as any other slot. But nobody objected to the slot. So I'm going to recommend, based on the survey, that we move the time to 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific time for the future. That's the proposal based on what I've got back from the survey. But if anybody wants, I can do what you said. Okay, does anybody object to our moving to time to that, or does anybody wish to discuss this further? Okay, hearing no objections, then that will be our new conference call time, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Central time, okay?
Second and fourth Wednesdays of every month.
Yes, second and fourth Wednesdays of the month, okay. So, let's move on to our last agenda item, which is discussion of the state of the 9/11 truth movement and plans for the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 event. Barbara, I know, has some input for us on this, so I'd like to give her the floor first, and then we can take the stack from there if anybody else has comments. Go ahead, Barbara.
Okay. Yes. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right. Is Senator Gravel still on the call? Hello?
I don't think he is.
Okay. I just wanted to make one comment about the Gravel initiative. It was before I make my comment here, and that was Sheila had a concern, and so do I. Many people do in the movement. After New York City Con, there are people here in Monterey who are hotel workers who gave $5,000 of their savings to that, and they are totally turned off to doing that again without some kind of guarantee that New York City Can ballot initiative wouldn't happen again, and I have the same concern. So for that very reason, I think it's extremely important before I would, for instance, and I told Senator Gravel this, and Byron Belisos, the executive director of his initiative campaign, that I would personally need to see the exact language of the Oregon Initiative language and the Massachusetts Initiative language before sponsoring. I've been asked to sponsor. So I just wanted to make that comment so that we could maybe all of us run it by our own legal commentators. So that's a comment I wanted to make. As far as the 10th anniversary is concerned, I have a question and then a proposal. The question is, does anyone know whether the Toronto hearings are open to any of us going and being in the audience?
Yeah, this is Ken. The answer is this. They have 200 seats reserved for audience members. I'm sorry, I may have that number wrong, but it's at $200 per person. It costs $200 to be a member of the audience, and I forget how many seats they have available.
100
seats. Okay, thank you. 100 seats at $200 each. That's the extent of it.
And I presume that you can reserve that with the money on their website.
Yes.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So that was my question. Now to my proposal. You know, this is, I want to just preface my proposal. I'll probably be able to say it in a minute and a half. I'd like to preface this proposal by just pointing out that in the past, I've had a record of success with the visions that I've had for the movement. The Boston Tea Party for 9/11 Truth was my vision that was put into effect there. I was the speaker, of course, at both. The first one with Robin, and the second one with Richard Gage and such, and have been called on the podium there the mother of the Boston Tea Party for 9/11 Truth. So that was a tremendously successful a vision that was brilliantly put into effect 2 years in a row, 205 and 206, and unfortunately hijacked first by the Ron Paul presidential campaign, and then from him by the right-wing corporatist wing of the Republican Party called the Tea Party. So but we're not responsible for the hijacking. It was a brilliant idea that was successful. And then last year on the 9th anniversary, it was my vision, which I personally executed with Steve White of New York, of the third beam in the skyline with full endorsement and 50-50 funding by Richard Gage and the Texan engineers for 9/11 Truth. So I just wanted to put in context 2 years or two times running really successful vision for anniversary events, and now I'm going to tell you my vision for the 10th anniversary. My vision for the 10th anniversary is, and I'm going to give you the gist of this, and the people that would be worked with, of course, would be Manny Badillo and Steve White and everybody in New York City. The idea is very simple, and there's a funny noise on the call. Can everybody still hear?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Okay, this is the gist of the vision that would be worked out with the folks in New York, just like I worked with him hand in glove with Richard Gage. Happened to be last year. Richard Gage wouldn't be involved with this, but would work hand in glove with Manny Badillo and Steve White and the folks in New York City. And that is this. One of our major challenges has been to unite the anti-war and the 9/11 Truth movement. I believe this vision could do it and would be the way to do it, as not only bring huge visibility to 9/11 Truth, but also unite the two movements. All right. It's very simple. The moment, then this would be organized in advance, of course, the moment that the official 10th anniversary reading of the names begins at ground zero of the 2,993 people who died, with the reading of the first name with as many big megaphones and as much amplification as we can, as close to ground zero, probably right outside the cyclone tent on the sidewalk, we start reading the actual names of the individuals who have been killed in Afghanistan and Iraq. And we keep reading for months after they stop their list. That's the vision. Now, I'd like you all to think about it and get back to me with your reactions. I believe that both the anti-war movement and the 9/11 Truth movement would be united in this, and that it wouldn't be long. The authorities would react, but that's good. That gives us visibility. We have to be ready if they arrest one of us reading names with a megaphone, that then a megaphone passes across the street, that we never stop reading the names. And there is an organization in Iraq that has gathered the actual names. I'm researching whether the actual names, whether there's a similar effort for Afghanistan. That is the vision. I appreciate feedback. Doesn't have to be now.
George here. Would that include both soldiers and citizens and the civilian dead?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the movement thought was good. You know, when I came up with the vision for the third beam in New York City, it was such that I had to individually implement it. Because it's a physical spotlight, four spotlights on the back of a truck, you know. But for the Boston Tea Party for 9/11 Truth, I had that vision, gave the vision to Mia Hamill at the 206 Chicago conference. She loved it and in turn got it to the folks in Boston who brought it to life and then invited Robin and myself and Bob Bowman and others to speak at the first one as well as the second one. So I didn't implement Boston Tea Party for 9/11 Truth. I was a keynote speaker. But other people would implement this. I couldn't implement it alone like I did the third beam. So all ideas to make it better or improve it or whatever are welcome. It would be a team effort.
Robin on the stack.
I've said what I need to say.
Go ahead, Robin.
I think it's a great idea, but when you consider the audience is stirring up the media, even though I understand fully what you mean by including the innocent Iraqi civilians being killed, I completely concur and understand right where you're going, but talking about having major impact, I really believe if you focused on the names of the United States soldiers who have been killed, that it would be far more direct and effective and probably more manageable and meaningful. That would be my only comment. It's another great idea, Barbara.
Okay. Well, my comment back to that would be give the soldiers first and then start with the Iraqi names and then start with the Afghani names. The impact of this idea is, frankly, that the names are read. It's the pure volume of the both military and civilian deaths far above and beyond the almost.
I got it, Barbara. It's a brilliant idea again. I got it.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you more about it, Robin.
Okay.
George, just briefly on the stack, and then we probably should talk about this offline unless others want to keep talking about it. But the light was brilliant. I'm thinking it was a very visual event. This is a very, and so it has a lasting usefulness. This is an audio event that is actually it doesn't have much punch. It's somewhat of a tedious event, and by design. It goes on and on and on, whereas the whole purpose is to show that, and you use the word volume, meaning quantity, but also because it's an audio event, volume might, you were talking about using bullhorns. At any rate, I'm thinking of something like the debt clock, which is a visual event that is very graphic and pointed, and I'm wondering if we could have the same goal but have a visual event instead of an audio event.
Or we could have both. We could read the names and also have the visualization of the relative proportion in length or something.
This is Ken. It's now 7:37, and I think that this idea has sparked a lot of interest. So what I'd like to propose is that we formally adjourn and continue informal discussion on this question with Barbara. I myself have comments I want to make, but I want to free up people that feel an obligation to be here until we adjourn before we continue. Is that all right with everyone?
Ken, I do want to make the comment that I was going to make before. It was my proposal to let Senator Gravel go ahead, and I said I had a comment, which we have never gotten to. And I kind of think you actually did not handle that right, because we were supposed to go back to that after we were done with Senator Gravel.
No, I think the way it was resolved was that somebody, it was Robin, and insisted that we clear the stack out before we move forward with Jonathan's proposal. So that's what we did. There was nobody left on the stack.
I was left to speak, and it was my proposal to let Senator Gravel go ahead rather than me.
Right. Sheila's
and I'm
correct.
Like, now I will know never to do that again, because I don't like how it turned out. I don't want to wait an hour to say what I have to say.
Well, I think if you go back and listen to the recording, you'll see that I'm telling you the truth. But I don't want to get into the debate about that right now, because that's off topic right now. I'm asking that we adjourn formally, but continue the discussion with Barbara about her idea. Does anybody have an objection to that?
Yes, I do, because I still want to say what I have to say.
Yeah, I have an objection. I'm Barbara. I want to hear what Sheila has to say, because, frankly, I was confused and thought that Sheila was left on that stack as well.
All right, Sheila, you want to make your comment, and then we'll adjourn?
Yeah, I do. In terms of A&E not being supportive of this of Senator Gravel's work here, I'm hoping that some people will start to get the picture about what's going on over at A&E. And I think that as if we're going to call ourselves truth leaders, we need to start waking up and smelling the coffee about what's happening over there. And I realize a lot of people don't want to hear it. A lot of people idolize Richard Gage. And I agree that they have done a lot to push forward the 9/11 truth movement. But I also think that WTC is ultimately a dead end. We've already had seen on Fox News where Geraldo Rivera and Judge Napolitano have come on there saying maybe it was controlled demolition. They had some A&E people on there and said maybe it was controlled demolition, but the government wasn't involved with it. The government didn't know about it. The government didn't have anything to do with it. That is the spin that we're seeing about WTC, and I think
That's correct.
Is why it's a dead end.
I agree with Sheila.
Barbara. I just feel that we need to start. I see that people seem to have blinders on. They keep wanting to refer to any criticism of A&E as some kind of infighting or squabbling. But if you have people who are telling bald-faced lies, which I have pointed out numerous times to this group, I don't need to do it again, I don't think, and then are behaving in ways that are not going to further the truth movement, I do think you have to start seeing what's going on. And I'm hoping people will start getting the picture.
I'd like to comment on that, it's Barbara.
I would as well. This is Adam Ruff.
Well, we can comment and comment and comment, but the fact is that we've already exhausted our agenda, okay? I would like to adjourn and then continue
the agenda having to do with the Toronto hearings. This was what we postponed from the discussion about the Toronto hearings and why they were refusing to have any legitimate Pentagon researchers there.
Sheila, I recognize your point now. You were talking about the Toronto hearings, not the Senator Gravel thing. I misunderstood you.
Yes, all right.
Let's allow 5 more minutes for this, and then we'll adjourn. Is that all right?
Okay.
I have a comment, Barbara.
I'd like
go
to
ahead,
be on
Barbara.
The stack also. This is Adam Ruff.
Okay, so Barbara and then Adam, is that correct?
Yeah, and then Robin.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
Barbara, Adam, and then Robin. Go ahead, Barbara.
Okay. I fully agree with Sheila, but I would want to say briefly why. There's no question but that the spin, it's called, damage control. The spin on a pure focus on the World Trade Center and not looking at the Pentagon objectively, the people who actually, the real perpetrators of 9/11 would love that. Now, I happen to agree that only the Pentagon, the truth about the Pentagon, because it has to be an inside job, the truth about the Pentagon must be brought into Toronto at all costs. Now, I would like to comment on Richard Gage. I've worked with him hand in glove. I know him personally. He lives up the street from my brother. We've had lunch a lot, dinner a lot. Richard Gage, I agree with Sheila. I believe that Richard Gage's organization has been infiltrated, and I could name names to Sheila offline. But Richard himself is like the innocent who is being led astray, in my opinion. That doesn't change the effect of their board of directors' votes. The bottom line is, there was a discussion about a year ago. Richard told me himself about it. There was an objection by Dwayne Deet, who is a close personal colleague and friend of mine. He's been working with me hand in glove for 9 months on my DVD from the San Diego 9/11 Truth Talk that I gave January 9th. Dwayne Deet actually resigned from A&E over what I'm about to tell you. There was a vote. I believe Dwayne was on the board, but regardless, he knew about it. He told me about it about a year ago. There was a proposal at the A&E board that somebody said, and I think it was Dwayne. Anyway, Dwayne agreed with it. Dwayne said, I don't understand why you call yourselves architects and engineers for 9/11 truth instead of architects and engineers for the truth about the World Trade Center. I think you need to expand your focus to everything about 9/11, to the Puts, to the Pentagon, to Pennsylvania. And there was an explicit vote by whoever the board was then not to do so and to focus only on WTC at the exclusion
of everything else. Who made that challenge?
I believe Dwayne Deet. I could clarify with him about that. But whether he actually raised the question to be voted on, he voted to become more inclusive. Pentagon puts Shanksville, et cetera, and was voted down, and he resigned as a result of it. So I know about that decision by Richard Gage and his board to focus only on WCC. Now, beyond that, I'm almost certain, but I don't know, but believe me, I could ask Richard and he would tell me. We're friends, personal friends, as well as colleagues on 9/11 Truth. I'm almost certain that Richard's and A&E's decision not to endorse, formally endorse, Gravel's initiative is simply a matter of time and energy of their A&E people. They are dedicated to a congressional investigation, which I agree with Gravel is a wrong decision, and I have tried to convince Richard of that myself. But they have made that decision, and they're sticking with it, and they can't do both and do both well. So I don't think that it's a rejection of Gravel's initiative. It's purely a matter of focusing the time and energy of their group members. That's my belief.
Okay.
That's my comment.
Thank you. Okay. Let's see, Adam.
Hi. Well, I agree with almost everything that Barbara just said, but I would like to add that add to what Sheila said earlier about infiltration. I don't think these things are an accident. I'm just going to come right out and say it. I am convinced 100% that A&E has been infiltrated along with other organizations. And the goal of that infiltration is to, number one, divide the movement, and number two, stonewall or hinder any efforts that have a legitimate chance of success, which is why I believe they will not support Senator Gravel. They will not support legitimate Pentagon researchers. In addition to that, what we're seeing here is a control of the Toronto hearings as well. And I believe that the Toronto hearings will focus on the World Trade Center, and if there is any discussion of the Pentagon, it will be from the perspective of anti-CIT, anti-Pilots for 9/11 Truth people. And that's it goes right along with the COINTELPRO effort, which I think is going full steam ahead, and we're ignoring it, and I think that's a huge mistake. That's all I have to say.
Okay, Robin?
Well, perfect time for the inclusion or reminder again of the concept of friendly fences. Let me just give you a thumbnail of how I see the movement. If we are correct that the high perpetrators planned this thing out, you know, a year before, however much before 9/11, one of the things that there are two things that they would do in addition to the tactics and the techniques and the operational aspects of it. Number one is they would put into place a process of controlling the media, which is obviously we know not all that hard. But the other thing that they would do is they would make sure that there would be counterintelligence operatives in any and all, I'm going to say that again, any and all, okay, organizations that would come up as a result of, in opposition of, you know, the official story. They knew that this would cause an uprising, so they would have systems, people, places, ideas, concepts, okay, in place to infiltrate it. So Adam and anybody else is 100% correct that things have been infiltrated. Friendly fences establishes the fact that it doesn't matter, and it doesn't matter. They're there. What needs to have happen is that whomever has an expert field in whatever it is that they feel that they're talking about regarding their analysis of 9/11 sort of needs to be supported and not necessarily encumbered by saying, yes, I'm going to agree fully with this other category, okay, or this other angle of whoever is investigating. Like, for example, Paul Zarembka, I think, is still on the phone call, okay? I couldn't talk about it in a put option if my life depended upon it, but I'm thrilled that he's so good at what he does in dealing with that. It's like, talk to that guy. And I personally am very troubled by Ryan and some other people, and I think this is where Gage and those guys are smart. You know what? I don't want to hear anybody who doesn't understand aviation or FAA or radar information. I don't want to hear about them, you know, yapping it up. I mean, I totally embarrassed Frank Legg when he started to talk about radar issues, and it's just a disaster, okay? So the bottom line of the story is whomever can do whatever it is that they can do to their best of ability in their own way has to be, I feel, let go and be supported. So again, the friendly fences, if you put them in between the different things, then we combine with a whole net result and force moving ahead into truth-seeking. And this friendly fences thing is just far more competent and thoughtful and perhaps brilliant than you think, okay? Because it takes away counterintelligence, because we say, we don't care. We don't care. Those guys are doing that. CIT is doing that. You know, Ashley's doing that. These guys are doing that. We don't care. We're all going to just go ahead and do the best as we can as citizens to just say, hey, you know, this is the way I look at it, and here's my expertise, and you want to talk about buildings, talk to Gage, you want to talk about chemistry, talk to Jones, you talk to me, or Harrit, or something like that. So I really feel that you have to step up and beyond, okay, the petty stuff, and that's my point. We are not going to go anywhere, and Adam, I'm going to say to you that you argue against yourself. You argue against yourself, and you create the very thing that you fear by taking such a hard stand as that. Of course we're infiltrated. It's one of the world's biggest frickin' scandals. My Lord, we're infiltrated. Who cares who they are? I don't care.
Well, I'd like to respond to that. And I agree in concept with friendly fences. I think it's a great concept. The only problem is that real COINTELPRO people are not going to sit static. They're going to continue to work their program, whatever that might be. And unfortunately, we've seen some success. I think they have totally overthrown and taken control of 9/11 Blogger, AE 9/11 Truth. And we essentially have had our voices squelched by this COINTELPRO program. And I don't see how just ignoring it is really going to help us at this point. That's all.
Adam, I'm not saying to ignore it. I'm saying that you accept that it's there, and when it rears its ugly head, you just develop another strategy. You come up with another idea. Honegger is like a great example of this. We're sitting in a certain moment. She's saying, what can we do? What's a goal? Bingo, we come up with an idea. We keep on changing. We keep on moving. We keep on moving ahead, and then just let them catch up to us. We know that that's the case. If you...
Barbara, we have to be a moving target and be
absolutely
smarter than them.
And I'm telling you right now, Adam, if you put on the emergency brake and take time out right now to get all of us together and say your coalition is successful, which is okay, the entire 11, I'm being facetious here a little bit, but not so. The entire 11th Truth Movement on the 10th anniversary has to come to a complete stop so we can spend all of our time outing the counterintelligence operatives within all of our movements. Is that not exactly what the counterintelligence operatives want to do?
Yeah.
That's exactly what they want to do.
Well, first of all,
you're putting words in my mouth. That is not what I would do.
I said I went to the logical extreme, Adam. I put my words into your interpretation.
And your logic is different than mine. My goal was to force out into the open through debate these COINTELPRO people by getting behind an effort to force a debate between people like Frank Legg and people like Rob Balsamo and yourself. Because once they're in a debate, they can no longer escape the realities that will become apparent during that debate. In other words, they're going to lose decisively, as you found out in your discussion with Frank Legg. Okay? And then that's going to be public knowledge for the entire truth movement. The problem we have is because organizations like 9/11 Blogger have been infiltrated and taken over, essentially, we have no way to reach the entire truth movement anymore.
Well,
well
I think
harder.
How are we going to get the word out?
No, I think it's better to create alternative communication networks, which is what was going to be part of the discussion in today's agenda, which is, you know, looking forward, evaluating the truth movement. We have a whole bunch of social media and a whole bunch of other ways, okay, of communicating with the public, which to me is much more important than communicating with the truth movement, because we have got stuff. We have simply got the stuff. It just isn't out to the public. So to me, the inter-locker room, intra-locker room squabbles are just, they're just anti-productive to me. I like working on concepts like what Barbara said and the guys, what the guys are putting together in D.C. In November, was it 11-11-11? I like moving ahead. I like just keep moving ahead instead of squabbling about the small stuff. Because you know what, Adam, I think, I mean, I appreciate your inputs in this situation, but if you think that you are going to force counterintelligence to show their hand because you're in some form of a debate here and there about something, and you don't think that they're going to figure out a way with their multi-billion-dollar with their multi-billion-dollar funding inside the Pentagon, that they're not going to be able to manage all of that stuff and then eventually control it out to the media and then out to the people. No, man. You're just not that good.
Well, they haven't been successful in fooling everybody.
We agreed
to do this for 5 minutes, and it's been a lot longer than that.
What I would like to do
here is to formally adjourn, but continue the conversation. Now, we can continue to record it. I would like to end this recording, adjourn the meeting, and then start a new recording to continue this thread. Okay, because it sounds like it's interesting to me, and I think it's interesting to everybody else that's stayed on the call this long. We can continue it. We can record it and have it for our reference later if you wish.
I would keep it on one recording.
Well, I guess we can do that, but I don't know how long these recordings work for, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment. It's Barbara. I don't remember a vote that we were, I think you just unilaterally said, I believe it's Ken, that we would continue for 5 minutes. To me, the importance of this discussion far outweighs that of...
Well, Barbara, I'm sorry. There's something I need to inform you of, okay? These calls are generally an hour in length, an hour, okay? We are now at the two-hour mark, okay? That's the problem that I'm facing as a facilitator, is that we have an obligation to people who have signed on for an hour call to keep these things reasonably limited. That's my concern. Now, if everybody on this call wants to extend it further, okay, and has no problem with this being extended, all you have to do is say, I propose that we continue the meeting, and then we can do that, okay? But I want to make sure that everybody is heard from on that question, because we've never had a meeting to go on this long before, okay?
I have to go, so that's in order, okay?
Does anybody object to adjourning? Does anybody object to adjourning?
Then it's going to be debatable,
but it takes a two-thirds vote to prevent us from adjourning at the appropriate time, okay? And it is appropriate time now to adjourn. So, does anybody, let's go ahead and take a vote, I guess. We'll try it for voice vote, and if it's not clear, then we'll go ahead and take a roll call.
Well, what about discussion?
You mean adjourn and then continue after. Is that what you're saying, Ken?
Yes. It's either adjourn or continue after, or it's continue the meeting. Those are the two choices that we have, okay?
I have a clarification question. It's Barbara. But why I understand we're going to vote, but why do we need to end and have another recording when anyone can leave the call whenever they need to?
People have limited time commitments,
Barbara, and we've always advertised these calls as never going over an hour and a half. Never going over an hour and a half. It's already 2 hours.
I understand. I didn't realize it was Anna. Okay.
So it doesn't matter who it is. The point is, if anybody has a problem with us not adjourning, we need to consider adjournment because that's what it calls. That's what's called for in our agenda. Okay.
Got it.
Okay. So, that said, does anybody have an objection to our formally adjourning at this point? Hearing no objection, we are adjourned. We can continue the discussion.
Yeah, I'd like to make. I'm going to be losing the. Going out of touch with the cell phone I'm using. So I'd like to request people to communicate on the listserv as well as continue. But if I leave, that's fine. But
well,
I want
to. Jonathan, you'll be able to go back and hear the recording of this because I'm not going to turn off the recording. I'll keep it going for at least. At least another 15, 20 minutes, okay?
Okay, I just want to encourage people to communicate by email at the listserv.
If you're not on the listserv, if you're not on that listserv yet, on the 9/11 teleconference listserv, send your request to Jonathan. He'll put you on it, okay? Just send him your request to be on the listserv if you're not on it yet.
Okay,
all right,
I would need,
Barbara.
This is Barbara. I would need Jonathan's email to do so, but I would do so.
Okay, well, you can send it to me, and I'll send it to him, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, and
okay,
I'll send you an invite when I get home.
Thank you,
okay,
Jonathan.
Good. And
okay.
I do have a comment continuing wherever
go
I am.
Ahead,
in the
go ahead, Barbara. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm going to leave the call. Good night, everybody.
Okay, good night.
I've got to go.
Good night.
Yeah, am I on now?
Yes Barbara. You have the floor.
Okay. There were a couple of comments. I think it's important that I just didn't have time before. That people need to know. And the first is Sheila still on the call? Hello?
I don't think
Sheila?
So.
No. Okay. Well, I have Sheila's email. I will also tell her this by email. But it's important for people to understand that David Ray Griffin is adamantly opposed to the Gravel Initiative, doesn't matter what state it is. I don't know if you guys are aware of that.
No.
Yeah,
adamantly opposed to what? He's opposed to what?
He is opposed viscerally, very totally against the Gravel initiative process by state initiative, ballot initiative.
Why?
He's against it. He's against it, and I've been told this in person in a meeting with him and his wife.
But why?
Against it. I'm about to tell you. He is against it because his wife Ann is against it. I don't know if you're aware, David. I mean, I am guessing. David defers to his wife on this question, and she is adamantly against it. His wife, I was at the meeting in San Diego about 2.5-3 months ago now, when it was the first time David Ray Griffin went even quasi-public. It was for a potluck and informal discussion at Ted and Melise Muga's house, and I was invited to that. I flew down for it from Central Coast area of California. And David's wife, Ann, asked the group to please not ask David to do anything else on 9/11 for his health. So just so you know, his wife is against David doing anything on 9/11. And David has said no to his wife. But one of the things he has agreed with her on is not to support the Gravel initiative process. And my understanding on that, from at least a half an hour emotional conversation with Ann, with David sitting there and deferring to her and then agreeing. I turned to David and said, do you agree? He said, yes. And this is the reason you have not seen David Ray Griffin endorse Gravel's process. And I've told Gravel this, and Gravel knows it. One of the main reasons that Gravel dropped the California initiative process, he told you on this call that it was because it would cost $2 million. That's not the real reason. The first and foremost reason was when I communicated to him and he confirmed with David that David was against it. The second reason was that in the initiative language for California only, and that's why I need personally, and I think we all do, to see the actual proposed draft language for each state, Oregon, Massachusetts, and any others, before we endorse publicly, anybody endorse publicly. In the California draft language, Gravel set himself up in the actual text to be the sole exception to an existing California state constitutional provision that states explicitly you can't name anyone in a initiative language. So right there, it was going to go to the courts, and it was going to be almost certainly thrown out and at a very minimum, bollocks up in the courts for many, many years. So David Ray Griffin knew that. He saw the language, and he rejected it.
So that's the primary reason, is because of the relationship between Gravel and the California political process here? That's it?
Well, I'm not sure what your question is, but
I'm asking if there are any other reasons other than that Gravel, in David's interpretation, positioned himself, let's say, unusually in the case. Is that what you picked up, Barbara?
Well, it's not just picked up. It's explicit in the language. I can send it to you. Gravel was making himself very consciously the sole exception to an existing California state constitutional provision. We would have been made the laughing stock of the entire world for trying to do
that's for California. What does David have to say about Massachusetts and Oregon?
What David has to say about Massachusetts and Oregon is that he's against any state ballot initiative process because his wife is adamantly against it for her own reasons. She's seen how it goes to the court, how they are vague, how they end up in the court. She's against the whole process, and she has convinced him to be against the whole process, regardless of the state. This is just
okay,
a fact.
Okay. All right, so Barbara, thank you for that information, but from what you are saying to me is that David's wife is against this whole thing, and by saying that David is against that is maybe not quite right. So that's very uncomfortable.
No. I've asked David explicitly if he would endorse, if he was going to endorse. Gravel
right.
specifically asked David to endorse publicly, and David refused.
Right, right.
And I'm telling you the reasons behind it.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the other major point I'd like to make, and I think it's important for everybody to know, and I'll tell Sheila especially independently by email, is that I'm not sure if you're aware of David Ray Griffin's new book, which is about to come out very shortly, before the 10th anniversary. I forget the exact name of it, but I think it's something like 9/11 Truth, : a consensus approach. And this is the basis of he is giving the opening 45 minutes to our opening remarks at Toronto on the first day, September 8th, and it's based upon his new book, which he has run every single word by me for comments, editing, etc. So I know every word of that book. And I'm telling you that book, and I presume, I'm guessing, but I would put money on it, that his opening remarks at Toronto will summarize the main point of his book, which is that especially that the Pentagon is critical to add to the discussion, but the movement must focus first and foremost on what everybody agrees on, whether you believe A-757 at the Pentagon, whether you believe it was Flight 77 per se, whether you believe no plane hit, whether you think a missile hit, whether you think it was inside explosives, or any combination thereof. His point is everyone in the movement agrees Al-Qaeda could not have had the access to do it. Hani Hanjour couldn't have flown the plane. Al-Qaeda didn't do it. Therefore, it was an inside job. Stay there. Focus on that. That is his message, one of his major messages. And I just want you to know that his whole book, which is about to come out, I would say in a month, maybe, hopefully, that book will be the Bible for Toronto, in my opinion.
Well, that seems to be standing in some interesting contradiction to what the expressed goals of the Toronto hearings are now. To me, I find, you know, maybe this is going to be possibly a good thing. I'd have to read the book myself because if David makes the point, which Toronto makes the point, that really we can only go ahead if with certain subject matters or whatever it is, if we all agree, that is clearly a premature position for this type of a movement to take at the moment. Okay? So I would argue, Barbara, that if that's the case, then I would be able to mount a fair argument of saying, well, that's a shutdown book.
It's really not. I mean, when you read the book, it's really not. What he's trying, he's doing his very best to build bridges and what you call friendly fences. He's doing his best within his belief system of what the data shows could and could not have happened at the Pentagon and elsewhere. He's doing his very best in the spirit of what you're trying to do, Robin, with friendly fences. I just want you to know that.
Okay, yeah, no, that's why I'm probing you. That's good.
Yes.
This is Ken. I'd like to make a kind of a summary comment on what you said, Barbara. It sounds to me like David Reed Griffin's wife is taking exactly the same approach to state initiatives being futile as Senator Gravel takes to the 8911 approach to getting congressional action. In other words, this is a tactical difference of opinion is what it amounts to. But she basically believes that it's futile to pursue this line of activism, and Gravel saying, you know, this is the one that can work, and you know, the one that you support, basically the 8911 approach, is the one that's futile. So that's really what it comes down to. But apparently, you know, she's got his Gravel Griffin's here, and Gravel doesn't. That's the bottom line, right?
Yeah, the bottom line is he's not going to change his position. Just so you know, see, he's been from your all points of view, David has just been silent. He hasn't publicly endorsed, but I'm just letting you know he's not going to.
Yeah. I should give you an update, though. I mean, when Senator Gravel was on this call the very first time, he gave us quite a detailed summary of the problem in California, and it had to do with the fact that it was going to be very expensive to make the California thing work precisely because it involved a constitutional amendment along with the initiative because of the prohibition. And that's why the decision was made to leave the California thing on the back burner and move ahead with Oregon and Massachusetts and Alaska and so forth.
I understand, and I wasn't on that call, but I would be pretty sure that he didn't probably add the detail that particular constitutional amendment that would be abrogated in the single case of Senator Gravel himself being named in the initiative was in fact the problem that caused David Ray Griffin's wife to go through the ceiling.
George here, Ripley. I am wondering. I sensed you were saying that at the very beginning that Barbara was worried about his health, and that she didn't want him perhaps throwing his lot in with a whole brand new approach. And get all excited and worked up about it. I'm wondering if Anna is her name, or Ann, is politically active to the point where she has educated feelings about ballot initiatives. Some people are opposed.
She does. It's not just about his health. Because her plea at the first coming out of David that I was at in San Diego about 3 months ago was for people to not ask him to do anything, no speaking, no initiatives, no anything. And in addition to that, there was a separate breakfast brunch meeting with me, Dwayne Dietz, and a few others in which they told us in very great detail why he was not going to endorse the Gravel process.
Okay, and in detail, that would have to do specifically with the expense or the constitutional situation in California. Would it also be a reticence to support a ballot initiative anywhere in any state?
Well, according to Ann, yes. But I personally believe, I know that David was opposed to the language in California because Gravel was mentioned by name, which was a contradiction with an existing constitutional provision in California. So that alone made David not support that as an individual. If he sees the actual, that's why I'm saying, as I did earlier in the call, in the official part of the call, that it's important for all of us, not just the people in Massachusetts and not just the people in Oregon, to see these proposed draft languages that Gravel is supposed to be sending just to Oregon and Massachusetts tonight. I think we all need to see it. Because there were serious legal constitutional problems with when Gravel said, oh, I just dictated it to the Secretary of State in California. No, excuse me, the Secretary of State went along with his language, and yes, it was on their letterhead, but it would have caused all these constitutional problems nevertheless. So Gravel is giving you part of the story. I support the Gravel initiative, I just want you to know, but I could not support the specific one in California because of the constitutional contradiction.
Right. Well, that's a bunch of legal stuff that we have to sort of get to, but I think that you and I, Barbara, are in agreement on not putting all our eggs in one basket and keeping a multi-headed serpent alive and well, and just hit them however, wherever you can. It's so discouraging to have people just say, you know, let's get this functioning element of the movement and let's make it less functional. and do that from the inside. That's my big challenge to the Toronto group. I actually, Barbara, think that the Toronto hearings, if it's handled the way you express Griffin is going to handle it, then I think we're going to be sort of okay. But if it is handled the way paragraph or goal number two is expressed, which is to just basically it's saying we're going to eliminate all the other information in the 9/11 Truth Movement as being invalid while we validate only the information that we've got. What the Toronto hearings run the potential of accomplishing is something that our dishonorable opposition has not been able to accomplish. Toronto may, from within the 9/11 Truth Movement, end up discrediting a great amount of the Truth Movement, and then our opposition is going to say, "See, we've been telling you that for 10 years. Even your highest levels of things don't agree with some of the stuff you're saying." Yeah, I'm oversimplifying on purpose here.
Right. But that's the reason that I asked, and I'm glad to hear that anyone can go that pays $200. I will be there with DVDs and papers and documents and sworn affidavits to hand out to everyone in the audience and on the board and every speaker. They cannot prevent the information from being given to them.
Yeah, but I'm glad that you're going to be there. I'd be there myself, but I just simply can't afford it, as I wrote you. But Barbara, you're paddling. You have a boat, and you're downstream, and you're paddling upstream. It can be very easily interpreted by the who's who of the mainstream media, and interpreted. Your voice may not be heard at all, and then the mainstream and all the high perpetrators are going to sit there, and they're going to say, "Look, we've been trying to tell you this for years, and now your own highest levels of your thing, they're discrediting all of you."
I understand
that you're going to try and you're going to do your stuff. You've always done that. That's how you thrive. You're awesome at doing that. But I think,
I've challenged
them to say, drop that thing and manage what your goals are differently.
Yes, I agree with you. And our time to influence those decisions, especially with Graham McQueen. He's the most important one, I believe.
Yes.
Graham McQueen and Daniel LeBlanc are the two most important people, not Lori Manuel. So the people on the board need to hear from us. They need to hear from us in a completely diplomatic and controlled and logical way, and they need to get the evidence so that they know what we believe, what individuals who are researchers believe needs to be addressed. It's
right.
up to
Barbara.
Them. It's their show. It's their wedding. But
we
have to do everything we can between now and then.
Barbara, Graham, I wrote personally and said he was taking my concerns and my personal things about friendly fences and what have you, okay, to the board and to discuss the issues that I just kind of shared with you. But the fact of the matter is, Barbara, is for the most part, they already know of all of the reports from all of us from all around the different area, including CIT and you and me and every pilots. They really have all the information, and they have made it, I think, unfortunately, made it clear that they're going to acknowledge only a certain amount of that information. And so, to me, they, by trying to do something good, I think they may end up creating some problems. But at least I've written David Ray Griffin about this, and he's told me he's going to try to deal with it in his opening remarks. And
obviously, the book is going to. Yes, and he will.
Right, and I trust that.
David is the dean of 9/11 research, right. And he will address it in his opening 45 minutes.
Right, and let's hope Barbara, if I could, I had a
comment on your proposal for the anniversary celebration in New York. That I wanted to share with you. It was the first thought that I had when you were talking about this action that you're thinking about.
Who is speaking? I'm sorry.
This is Ken Freeland speaking.
The
first thing that occurred to me was, because I'm always looking at the way in which things could be spun against us, okay, that you have to be very careful in the way that you did this in order that the media could never in any way show that you were somehow opposing the reading of the list of the victims in New York with another group of victims, okay?
They will probably try to do that unless you
can in some way be very affirmative of the initial call for victim recognition in bringing to light the hidden victims that are, you know what I'm saying? I think it's
very, very, very careful about that.
The
simple way to do that is you start out reading the 3,993, then you add the U.S. service members, then you add the Iraqis, then you add the Afghanis.
That's right. You start out with them, and then you continue along, and nobody can say that you're neglecting the other. That's
exactly.
right. Okay. I thought you were saying they were going to be reading these other names, and you were going to be reading these names with a megaphone. And I thought, well, I can just see them, you know, what they would do
with that. I only gave myself a minute to speak, in addition to continue the reading of the names for months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
That's good. Cool.
Now, you
That's
know, guys, I'm going to have to go. I have an appointment here. I've got to go. My mother was in the hospital with a coma, and I have to deal with it.
Oh, boy.
Good luck.
Thanks so much, Barbara, for being on the call,
Barbara.
Okay,
care,
we'll,
Barbara.
And continue any comments. Robin, I know you want to continue by email or calls. And
right.
Any other feedback with this idea for the reading of the name before I get to the folks in New York that did the third beam with me last year.
Right.
Well, get on the listserv, Barbara. Don't forget, Jonathan's going to send you an invite, or get your email. Doesn't get on that listserv and bring it up there and let people there play around with it, okay?
So I take it that I don't need to initiate anything. Jonathan will send me an email, and then I take action on that.
Right.
And
okay.
Barbara, this is Rob. Before you go, just a thought that I will come at you later, but I'd like you to think about it now is I'm not 100% sure how this is going to translate or motivate or encourage the peace community to reach towards us. I'm not sure that it will be a bridge. And that's obviously what I would like to have happen out of it. It's a great idea anyways, but I mean,
let's talk about how we can, of course, there are no guarantees. Let you and I talk about how that might be facilitated or made more likely.
Okay.
Okay.
Great, thanks.
Okay,
nice to hear from you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So how many are still on?
Well, Robin is here.
Good.
We've got five people are still on the call.
Great.
One of the things that we didn't get to today that I was hoping to get to, which I presume we're going to have carried over to the next meeting or the next teleconference, is a concept that I have. It's sort of an attitude that I have that I think the 9/11 truth community, truth-seeking community, should adopt as we get to the 10th anniversary. I think that the message that needs to be given to the world is that the 9/11 truth-seeking community is looking forward to the next 10 years of investigation and exposure and educating and political and legal activism, and that in no way, shape, or form are we considered feeling defeated or whatever. And I think that there are a lot of words that we hear every now and then that say, well, if it doesn't happen on this date, then we're done with, or if that doesn't happen, it's over, and all of these sort of self-defeatist things, which actually I sort of think is a sign of counterintelligence. But anyways, without being specific about that, a general concept that I wanted to just splash out to the leaders are that what we have a whole world, okay, of social media and other ways that we can get around the restrictions of Blogger, and there are just other ways that we can pull this kind of stuff off. And my general concept here is that we should at our 10-year time to build. What's that?
It takes time to build up all those social networks.
Oh, I agree. And Adam, I think that that's exactly like one of the conventions that we should have, because I'm not good at that stuff, but that's something that I think we should gather together at the top of the best minds and say, well, how can we do this? What's the best idea? And here's just the broad brush concept of it. I have four R's. Review our information, reflect on where we have been and where we are, reorganize in some fashions, and then repost all of the stuff that obviously we think is kind of valuable. And I just going for the next 10 years, those 3-4 hours, maybe somebody can throw something else in there, is to me, gotta be the way we look at this instead of having it, instead of showing any form of desperation.
I'd like to comment on that, Rob. Is this Robin speaking?
Yes, that was Robin.
Yeah, Robin, this is Ken, Robin. I'd like to comment on just what you said about the what you were terming defeatism. I think there's some truth to that, but I think there's another part of it that's positive in that. And I think that after 10 years of struggle over these issues, that it is time to recognize the futility of certain lines of activism that don't work, okay? I don't think that's defeatism. I think that's just tactical sensibility. And I think that's when you talk about reflection and seeing where we're at, I think that's one of the things we have to look at is what lines of activism have failed.
Right.
Not that activism itself is a failure, but that certain lines of action have failed and should not be, we shouldn't waste more energy, for example, in my opinion, trying to get Congress to act, for example, you know, that sort of thing.
I agree. That's part of the whole review process I'm talking about.
Yeah.
What works, what doesn't work, whatever. I'm talking about the defeatism expressed by certain people who are uptight for time. I mean, that to me is just like very specious. It's like, wait a minute, you know, us group of friggin', you know, ground pounders are taking on the world's biggest friggin' police department with the biggest intelligence, the biggest guns, the more to lose than any other organization on the planet, you know, and we have to have it done by 10 years? No, man. You know?
Well, I think that you have to recognize that some people take a long time to get organized and to get up to speed and then a long time to get down, and other people dip in and dip out. You've got all kinds of that kind of thing at work here, and those of us that are in it for the long haul will be here, and we need to recognize that desperation is not going to get us anywhere, and we're just long-distance runners, essentially. We're going to stick with it.
I agree. And I'm going to guess to you, this is what I'm going to guess, because I'm trying to project what mainstream, you know, what corporate media, what counterintelligence is going to plug, what things are going to be highlighted. I think that what is going to be highlighted are people who are in or represent that they're in the 9/11 truth-seeking community, those who express a frustration, oh, it's been 10 years or whatever, I'm going to give up now, or all the negative stuff, that's what's going to probably make the headlines. I think I can easily predict that. And I think that spiritually, especially with this leadership group, we should just kind of keep talking about this and just saying, well, how can we not let that happen? And how can we move ahead? And that, by the way, is the main principle, one of the main principles, other than what Barbara has shared with us about the concerns about Gravel, because I picked some other stuff up. That's one of the reasons that I didn't want to put all our eggs in this one basket, like sort of like what Jonathan was saying. He wasn't saying it specifically, but, you know, I don't have a problem moving it to the head of the class. But, boy, I think we've got a lot of other stuff that we have to keep on supporting. I know I'm thrilled at looking at 11-11-11. I think that's going to be the thing that's going to last, because the World Trade Center collapses are going to come to an end. That buzz is going to come to an end, and then we're going to have a process of looking into the Pentagon. And boy, if we can ever institutionalize 11-11, you know, November 11th every year, Veterans Day. Big gaggle, big meeting, big discussion, big whatever goes on in Washington, D.C., near the Pentagon about what the events went on at the Pentagon, it will be a magnanimous accomplishment.
Well, personally, I'd like to expand on what Ken said earlier about shutting down avenues of activism that haven't worked.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's absolutely one of the best comments that have been made, because we've got to come to a realization here that some things that we do don't work.
Agreed.
Okay. And I kind of have the feeling that trying to placate and cooperate with this group of people that are trying to shut down Pentagon discussion is one of the things that is not going to work for me. So what I'm going to do as a 9/11 truth leader myself, regardless of anyone else's decisions, is I'm going to take my camera and I'm going to confront people on camera and put it on the internet and let the chips fall where they may. We Are Change style, and I know you don't like We Are Change, Robin, but I think they've been extremely effective. I know that I joined the truth movement because We Are Change was out there confronting people.
And they've been extremely, I'm sorry, but they've been extremely effective at helping marginalize us.
That's your opinion.
That's
your opinion, and I don't agree with it.
Right. That's what I'm saying to you. I'm saying to you that you confront people putting that out on that. What you're showing is a divisiveness. You know, you're showing a divisiveness.
You've been filibustering all day. Let someone else talk for just a second. Okay,
let's do this. Go ahead and finish it, and then he can rebut you, okay? He can have a chance to rebut. Go ahead.
Okay. We Are Change LA did a confrontation with Bill Maher on live television, and within a month of that confrontation, there were over 3.5 million people who saw the video online. CNN did a report about it, and they showed World Trade Center 7 collapsing 3 times on live television, and it stirred up an enormous amount of discussion about 9/11 and about Building 7. Okay? Now, if you look realistically at this teleconference, who knows about it? Us and a few of our friends. Okay? Now, how does that compare to 3.5 million people seeing this one event within a month? Okay? There's no comparison. Let's get realistic here. Who knows about this conference?
Are you ready for my comment?
Other than us.
Are you ready for comment?
Sure.
Okay. Regarding the We Are Change LA thing and Bill Maher, not only was that the best 3 minutes that Katie and whatever his name put together, but because they pushed it the next time. Okay, great.
And the next time
it was tried, okay, Bill Maher set you up. He knew you were there, and then all of a sudden he makes a fool out of everybody. So, yeah, I understand part of what you're saying, but there's also a backfire to it. And the point is that this teleconference isn't designed for people, Adam, the general masses. This is designed to deal with the leaders to think about what is a better way to do what we've got to do. So there's better ways to do it. And I'm sorry, you're arguing against your own self. That's all I have to say. 3.5 million people, then it was shown by 3.5 million people again, and then Maher made a fool out of the entire group.
No, he didn't.
He did. He ran out into the audience doing all the, where's the security and all this stuff? Baloney, man. I've been in the business.
Okay, let's agree to disagree about that.
Right.
Is there anything else that we need to discuss before we close out tonight? Anybody else have any further comments?
I just hope that on the next meeting we do have the review and what we think of the status of the 9/11 Truth Movement, because I would like to try to get more people into the discussion, much like what Adam and I have just said, or we've all had, which is, how can we do some stuff better? I think that's going to be much more productive than throwing all our weight behind the 9/11, the Citizens 9/11 Commission initiative. We should go.
Okay, then I would suggest that you do this. Since the agenda is always open, and all you have to do is get your agenda item in before the Saturday before the conference, make very clear what you would like discussed and how much time you would like allotted to it, and it will go on the agenda. Or if there's too many things on the agenda, then I guess we'll all have to figure that out when we get the agenda for Mansion Time. But that's the way to do it, okay?
All right. Now, the only information I get is the report. Once a month, I get that report. Is there another system that I'm missing?
There is a draft. There is a no. All you let's see.
How do I
all
do
you
that?
All you have to do is send me a request for putting something on the agenda. Okay.
Okay. Now, is that okay?
Email.
So that's
email.
The email that you
send
to me. Okay, so and send you that email back.
Yeah, if you send me an email saying you would like such and such on the agenda for such and such a period of time, I'll put it on the agenda. Okay?
Okay, all right.
That's how it works.
All right, so I can respond to the email thing that you send out to me and use that email address?
Let's see, yeah. Uh-huh. It comes from me. I'm sorry, the minutes come from Anna now. The minutes come from Anna. But I'll tell you what, if you send it to her, she'll send it to me, so it doesn't matter. You'll get there either way.
Okay.
Okay? But if you'd like, Adam, is this Adam speaking?
No, that was
Who's
Robin.
Speaking right now, Robin? Robin?
Yeah.
Robin, I'm sorry. Yeah, Robin, I'll send you an email tonight with my email address, and you'll have it, and you can just send me an email.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. Are we all cool with closing down now?
I'm good.
Closing stuff. It's really been a productive discussion, and I think what we can do, since Robin wants to put this on the agenda for next week, we can encourage people to listen to the entire discussion as a prelude to continuing the discussion at the teleconference next 2 weeks. Okay. All right. Okay, thank you all for your participation and cooperation. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Good evening.
Thank you all. Bye.
Take care. Good night.